So you've decided to give up that old behavior that's been killing you and all you care for and surrender to a power greater than yourself. That's the first step. Surrender is what opens the prison door. Now it's time to walk through that door and into a whole new way of life. Spirituality, self-care, service, social connection, and the simple daily disciplines that pave the way to lasting freedom. This is Positive Sobriety. Welcome to another episode of the Positive Sobriety Podcast. I'm Nate Larkin.
I'm David Hampton.
David, I know we got a great guest coming up.
We do.
I got to tell you, I just got back from a fantastic trip. I had the greatest time, just a few days, quick trip out to Colorado.
Yes, you were out west again.
I was, met some new friends, had a great time out there with the folks at an organization called World Challenge.
World Challenge.
And did something I'd never done before.
All right.
I rented a Jeep from Hertz. Now, I've rented a Jeep from Hertz before, but I usually get that crappy little Jeep Liberty, which is, you know, it's like a, I don't know, it's not really a Jeep.
The
it's a sedan,
Jeep.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah.
But this time, they gave me a real honest-to-God Jeep. I mean, a Sahara with four-wheel drive.
Oh,
and the whole,
nice.
You know, you could take the top off it.
Ah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And my friend Matthew Ward, who I stayed with out there, he has a vintage four-wheeler of his own, and he knows those trails and river roads through the mountains.
Yeah.
Out there around Pike's Peak.
Yeah.
Yeah, so after you know, the speaking engagement and a podcast recording out there, Matthew took Gary Wilkerson and myself out off-roading.
Oh, man.
In the mountains. Oh, what a time it was.
You were 16 all over again. Oh, that's awesome.
But spectacular scenery.
Oh, I'll bet. Yeah.
And low humidity, a nice break from Tennessee.
Yeah, nice dry dry weather. it's a dry heat.
And it reminded me of you know, the necessity, really the absolute necessity of recreation as a part of healthy recovery.
Right, right.
I can get caught in a cycle of productivity where I'm keeping my nose to the grindstone. There are important things to do, and I keep focusing on important things. A regular schedule is very good.
Yes.
A routine is very good. I make better decisions if I can automate some of them, pre-make my decisions so that I don't have, you know, too many, so I don't get decision overload over the course of the day.
Right.
All of that being said,
yeah,
there is a great value in taking an occasional break from routine.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And if that can coincide with a change in location as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And during my years of active addiction, I would fall prey to the thinking when we go on vacation, right? You take a break, we go on vacation someplace beautiful, and then I would think, you know, the solution to all my problems would be to move here.
Yes, where I have no responsibilities and everything's lovely.
I'm going to take the geographic cure and everything will be fine.
Right.
No, no.
Yeah.
But still, even though that's not a permanent solution, it is definitely a part of positive sobriety to occasionally take a break.
Yeah, absolutely. Somewhere where you don't have to be under the microscope of your day-to-day life.
Right, right. Yeah. So I'm going to stick it to you right now. Have you got a vacation planned?
I have not got a vacation planned yet.
Okay.
But it's only August.
All right.
So
okay.
It's like my summer is, you know, but I've, you know, I take occasional trips up, you know, to the lake and things like that on the weekend, and that's always a break. But I don't have a week away yet planned.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really thinking about that. But I'm weird. I like cities. Like
I
like
do
to
too.
Go to Chicago or New York or things like that. Those energize me more than the, you know, the hiking and the mountains. I love nature. But...
Oh, I don't like hiking. I like riding in a Jeep.
Right. There you go. That is different.
Yeah, than yeah, yeah.
Climbing the rocks.
Yeah, no, I'm not gonna hike the mountains.
You're not gonna get your ass out of the Jeep.
Homie, don't do that. No.
I'll ride up there with you, though. Yeah, that's
okay.
Good.
Yeah, yeah.
And if we could pass a coffee shop at a Broadway show on the way, I'm in.
Oh, man.
Well, man, that I am so glad, though. You seriously, that you got that break and just got to breathe some fresh air and sunshine. But
I got back in time for this week's podcast.
Yes, you did.
You've got somebody to introduce us to. You met her a little while ago. We're going to meet her in a second. Stay with us. We'll be right back on the Positive Sobriety Podcast.
Welcome back to the Positive Sobriety Podcast. And Nate, this lady is a new friend of mine. I met Texas about 2 weeks ago, Texas. Is that right? We were Nashville. And she is absolutely one of the real deal people.
Oh, yeah?
Nice. Oh, yeah. Yeah. So she has a story and a passion for recovery and recovering people. And I just thought that it would be a great opportunity for her to get on and just share her story and her reality with us and the things that she's doing now, because she's very involved in a book that she has written called Deep in the Heart of Texas that is available and she'll tell us how to get all her contact information so you don't have to just go to Amazon and give them all your money.
Okay. That's nice.
So
that's
she can
nice.
Actually make a nickel or two on the book. And but Texas, welcome to the Positive Sobriety Podcast.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely.
All right, I've got to get the obvious question out of the way.
All right.
At the top. Texas is
Yes, I already know what it is. Is Texas your given my name? Real name?
Yeah. Yeah.
Texas is my real name, and no, I was not born in Texas or conceived in Texas. I've never lived in Texas. My grandfather was born there, and my mother said she grew up here in Texas, this, Texas that. Everything's bigger and better in Texas.
Yeah.
And she said, if I ever have a daughter, I'm going to name her Texas. And
wow.
Here I am.
And she just kind of gave you a big life right from the start. That's awesome.
All yeah.
Right. So yeah. You're not in Texas.
It wasn't.
Well, go ahead.
Good. I was just going to say, it wasn't such a great thing to have the name Texas when the police were looking for you. But now that I'm, trying to promote A Radical Difference, which is the name of my ministry, and my cause, Texas, is that kind of coming in handy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, people don't forget your name, and they certainly don't forget you. And so, and A Radical Difference is where people can get your book as well, right?
Right. A Radical Difference is the name of my ministry. It's a nonprofit, and the website is aradicaldifference.com.
Yeah.
So I want to hear your story. It doesn't start in Texas. Where does it start?
It starts in Miami, Florida. I was born in Miami, and I lived there for a short time. And when my father went to seminary, we moved to Jacksonville, and shortly after to North Carolina, where he pastored his first church. And growing up a pastor's daughter definitely has pros and cons. I learned the word of God. I met Jesus at 5 years old. There's no doubt in my mind that I came into contact with the God of my understanding at that age. But I really wasn't in a position to, I wasn't willing to do things his way. I think my experience with watching religion or religious organization or church or whatever you might call it was they were nitpicky people who were trying to find fault, and no matter what you did, it wasn't quite good enough. So I went, you know, I think God bit off a little more than he could chew dealing with these church folks, so I think I'll do things my own way.
Yeah.
Which I still kind of think, no. Not really. But I'll do things, you know, my own way, which gets you into a place of rebellion. And rebellion is a beast, because after a while, you're not really doing what you want to do, and there is no freedom in it. It's a lie that you're believing, and you're just doing what they say don't do.
Yeah.
And then you're owned by rebellion. So it's definitely a trick and a trap. So I quit school at 17 years old. Had never really been in any trouble, and I quit school at 17 years old. I smoked my first joint. Within 6 months, I did my first line of cocaine. And within 3 weeks, as an honor student, I quit school and ran away from home.
Wow.
Totally, my parents were totally unaware and unsuspecting, and poor Bob and Kathy. But it wasn't a tragic thing, I assure you. It was tragic because once a rebellion owned me, couldn't hear the voice of truth anymore, and then it was just, I'm going to figure this out my way. And I had already made up my mind to rebel against any system, any program, any, you know, whatever you tried to make me do, I was not going to do it. And so even when I learned the dope game and everything that came along with it, I rebelled against that, because see, it was okay to smoke pot, but you really shouldn't do cocaine. So I did some cocaine. Then it was okay to snort a line every once in a while, but you really shouldn't be smoking crack. So I had to smoke crack. And then it's okay to smoke crack, but don't ever shoot up. So I had to start doing that. And then of course I became a master of keeping that all a secret, because you can't sell ounces of cocaine as a crackhead. I'm not buying ounce of cocaine from a crackhead, so I wouldn't think it was a very good idea. But so then I really got this sense of invincibility, because I left home at 17 and never went to jail at 20 till I was 29. Now that seems like a good thing if you're living in that lifestyle, but it wasn't a good thing, because it gave me an incredible sense of invincibility and that this was working for me. Mm. So it's robbing me of my self-worth and my motivation and my morals and my freedom, but it's telling me that I'm making it, I'm okay, I'm beating the system. And so I was trapped, definitely trapped.
Wow.
I spent 28 years that way, and that's my story. The bad part of my story, that's it.
It sounds like are you familiar with the author Ann Lamott, Texas?
I am. I do know Ann.
You know how she says, I believe the quote is, her life was deteriorating faster than she could lower her standards.
So, yeah.
That's why you're...
She's good, boy. She's a real wordsmith, I'll tell you.
Yeah, I love her. Well, So you kind of just... continually, you know, like all of us in some form or fashion, you get into this spiral, and you know, the thing I wasn't going to do last week, I'm doing this week, and one thing leads to another, and so you do land in jail for the first time at 29, and how many times did you go to jail?
Well, I went to jail between 29 and 45, the ages of 29 and 45. I went to jail 18 times, and I went to prison, and I was in 8 rehabilitation centers, one of which was a year and 8 months of inpatient treatment. So I know what you're not supposed to do. I know what you're supposed to do, but you see, none of that helps if you don't want to do it. People do what they want to do. And so changing your desires is sometimes what seems impossible, but is definitely what has to take place.
Mm. Yeah.
So tell us about the process after desire changed. Do you have any way of tracking how that happened?
I do. I think I like that you use the word process. It's one of my favorite words now, right now, this week, anyway, because it is a process. It's a tedious and all-encompassing process, for sure. And every step matters. Every time I went to jail, something changed. Yeah. Every time I went to a program, it was additional information. It was new insight. It was, a commitment I made to do this different. You know, I didn't stick to everything, but all of it was a process because God had started something in me that He promised to finish.
Yeah.
And it didn't have to be finished the way you thought it should be finished or the way that I thought it should be finished, but it was going to come to a conclusion, even if that was in the end of my life. You know, there's no guarantee that you will live through it. And obviously I did, but it was definitely a process. And I think the final straw for me is I had to go do 10 months in jail after I had been clean for 5 months and had already started the book. So I had left Naples and I had moved to Lake Placid, which is where I now live, and with my parents, and had already been clean and was saying, I need to write this book. You know, I just knew that it would be very healing for me to try to make sense of all this stuff that made no sense, basically. And so I started writing. And then the police came to the door and said, are you Texas Stradio? I'm like, well, I don't know. Why? I said, yes, I am. And they said, we have a warrant for your arrest. And, you have to tell me what you're arresting me for. So they had to call and find out. And it was for some old sales charges. So they took me to the Highlands County Jail here and then have a transport for me to go to Collier County, and I'm going, surely God is going to intervene now, because He has stepped in and intervened, and I've walked out of jail many times when I was totally guilty of the crime and had no intention of doing the right thing, and I considered that grace, so certainly this God will show up now, and He did show up, but not the way I thought He was going to show up, because I stayed there for 5 months and then when I got sent to Naples, I stayed there for 5 months and finally got sentenced to a year in the county. Now, I don't know what you guys know about jail, but a year in the county is one of the worst sentences you can get, because if you get a year and a day, you get to go to prison. And prison, people think of it as worse, but for most, it ends up being much better, because you have a life there, in the sense that you get up and you go to work and you can leave the pod and you can walk around the compound and you have time on the yard and it's a prison life. It's not a good life, but it is a life. In jail, you sit in the same four walls. If you do get to go to rec three times a week, it's all concrete. There's no grass. And you're with the same people, and there's people in and out and in and out. And all that does is remind you that you're still here. So it's a miserable existence for most. And for me, it was more than once. But
how do you pass that time when it's just you and the four walls, Texas? I mean, in that kind of situation,
how do I pass the time, or how do most people in jail? Let me tell you, there's a long list of ways they pass the time, and most of them aren't real healthy. But for me, every time I went to jail, I got real quiet, which I'm not real good at. So in the sense, I read a lot. I'm not really a reader. That's why I donate books everywhere I go and speak. I travel and speak with a couple of prison ministries, and one of them, the major prison ministry I travel with, is Inmate Encounter. and I'm a platform speaker for them. And I donate 25 books to every facility I go to because people are quiet there. They can listen. You can't hear the TV if you have a jail that has a TV. A lot of people don't. They don't do TV anymore. Mm-hmm. So people that have never read in their lives read when they're in there. Not only do they read, they will relate completely to this story. And I always tell people, brace yourself. When I give it to like someone at church or something, I say, brace yourself. It's no sweet little come to Jesus book, because that's not what 28 years of drug addiction looks like.
Right.
And And I put it in there like it is, because we, the Big C Church, have to get to a place where we're able to bridge the gap between the world and God. That's our job. And if we can't do that, if we can't go into the world and preach the gospel, which does not mean say, do you know where you're going when you die? People don't care where they're going when they die. They want to know who's going to help them today. And wow. And although the salvation does guarantee where you'll spend eternity, it is also the answer you need for the problem you have today. And so I donate the books so that people can read that and see that through all of this stuff, Jesus was there. He was loving me. When I went running into brick walls time and time again and fell flat on my back and went, God, where are you? I need you. He said, get up, baby. Let's try it again. Because that's who God is. That's who the God I know is. That's who he's been to me. You know, and when I go to the prisons, I tell them, it doesn't affect my life what you do. If you go right back to drugs, I'm still going to be okay. I didn't come here because I'm getting extra money by how many of you, you know, change your life when I leave. None of that happened. I came here because I know what it's like to wake up with that pit in your stomach, with that hopeless, worthless, useless feeling about yourself. And I know that you don't have to do that anymore. I know that it can be different, and not because some pastor shoved it down my throat or some program reprogrammed me, although I could use some reprogramming. it wasn't like that. I did it. I know it because I experienced it. I know it because I experienced it. I felt it. It happened to me. It's real. And if I can make it out after 28 years, so can you.
Yeah. Yeah. Say, Texas, the name of our podcast, as you know, is the Positive Sobriety Podcast. We really do our best to move the focus. So often the focus in recovery is on what not to do. I'm going to spend my whole day not doing something. I'm going to move to... So we're moving the focus to what we do instead. When you look at your life today from that angle, the way what you do is different from what you used to do. What would you say are the positive elements of life today that help to sustain sobriety and serenity?
I'll tell you, I love that about this podcast and about you guys, because I am a positive person. I've always been a positive person. When there were no more drugs, I go, don't worry, some more are coming, you know. I've always been a positive person. For me, it happens to be an easier transition for some. But I'll tell you what you focus on expands. And if you focus, I hated going to NA. Listen, don't get me wrong. I learned some of the most valuable things I ever known in my entire life in NA, AA, CA, and those organizations. I love meetings. I love the people there. The people at NA will drive to China to pick you up for a meeting if they have to. And the people at church often won't do that. So I love that organization, and I don't ever want it to appear that I don't. But for me, I was like, I don't want to go to a meeting and sit around and talk about dope all the time. It makes me want to get high. And then when people are saying, this happened to me and telling your story, I'm such, blame it on me. There's no doubt. I'm such a crazy analyst. I'm thinking, well, that happened because you don't know what you're doing. And I'm reevaluating the way they could have got away with what they were doing. So it just wasn't me. You know, a positive thing. It just had my mind in not a good zone. And so I very much believe in what you're doing. And so for me, I think there's two things that are a big deal. Number one, I don't give a crap what happened yesterday. And when I say yesterday, I mean 10 minutes ago. If something happened 10 minutes ago and it's over now, it's over. I have no control over it. There's nothing I can do about it. And I'm going to let it go, because that was a big thing for me. It was like, I felt so guilty about not being there for my children, you know, because my story is not that different from any other drug addict. Mm-hmm. I did all the same dumb stuff y'all did or whoever did. It's the same story, just different people and different details, but it's the same story. And so I thought, I don't want to keep saying to myself, that's over. I can't do anything about it. And that's something that I learned in NA. If you keep one foot in the present and one foot in the past, I mean, one foot in the past and one foot in the future, then right. You're crapping all over today. That's, come yeah. on, man. They got the best yeah. one-liners ever.
They do, for sure.
They do. And they're all totally true. That is totally the truth. And so I said, I can't do anything about yesterday. And if I believe that Christ forgave me like he said he did, either I'm going to believe this stuff or I'm not. And if I believe that, then it doesn't matter what happened yesterday. So I had to let that go. And then the other thing I think was letting myself dream. Now, I have never, even in childhood, was a big dreamer, because to me, dreaming was a setup for letdown. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you dream about your wedding looking this way and your husband acting that way, or you're having this job or that, and it doesn't work out, then you're going to be devastated and unable to be happy with the way that it does work out. So don't even bother dreaming. Just let it happen as it comes. Mm-hmm. And I can still be that way a little bit. I am a realist. I'm not dreamy, everything. This could happen, and that's unrealistic. I definitely am not that. But I have allowed the Holy Spirit, who now lives in me and guides me through my life, I've tuned my ear to him and allowed him to begin to birth vision for something different than the life I have had. And so I don't care. I'm very big about, like, one of the things I think, one day I'm going to be talking to a stadium of people. Now, that's just a dream, sort of, that I have. It isn't really even something I want to do. It's just more a dream that I feel like God has given me. But I'll tell you what I do. I don't care. I don't care if I ever get to do that, but I'm going to let myself dream about that, because I can't be consumed with that or it causes problems too. But I don't want to not have vision for that, or I'll never get further than where I am today. Mm-hmm. So I don't know, keeping your dreams in checks and balances where they need to be are big things too. But I just definitely get up every day. I think gratitude is a humongous thing. I mean, there is so much to be grateful for. If you got 10 fingers and 10 toes, you got 20 reasons to be grateful. I mean, you really do, because if you lose a toe, your balance is off. If you lose a finger, you can't pick things up or fix your hair or whatever it is that you do the same way. Those are just little silly things. I look at two lizards fighting, or all the different colors that are on a tree. And those are things I didn't have time for before, and I didn't look at that. And I try to just look at and absorb and appreciate everything that's happening. And no matter what goes wrong, I try to think about what is it about me that needs to be adjusted in this situation. And something I've learned is every situation that you find yourself in is for the purpose of drawing you closer to God. So I said, Lord, what is it about me that you're trying to adjust through these circumstances? Maybe it's somebody I know who's on drugs that I've been talking to and I can't seem to help them, and there's nothing, they won't listen, but you know, I don't know what the situation is. Well, then I think I'm in that situation to help that person change their life. No, I'm not. I am in that situation to let God change something about who I am.
Yeah.
So I go, God, what is it about me that needs to change in this? Maybe that person will never get clean. Guess what? That's none of my business. That's between them and God. What is my business is what is it? Adjust to draw me closer to you and then make that adjustment. That's my thing.
You know, I remember a sponsor telling me early on when he was trying to get me to call him every day that he got more from the phone call than I did. And I didn't believe him.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Now, like,
there's a voice
good.
In the back of my head that says, I'm going to be an imposition. I'm an inconvenience.
Mm-hmm.
But now that people finally call me, I know exactly what he was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
How is your, you know, what the 12 steppers would call your 12 step work, your service work? How is that enriching your life?
Yeah, well, it's huge. It's so huge. Giving back is huge. And I think, you know, that it reminds you of where you came from. Always an important thing. You have, don't ever forget. You know, I think of how many times I got out of jail. I thought, man, I am never coming here again. It sucks. The food sucks. There's no tweezers. There's no, you know, I thought of all the things I had about it. And I thought, I am never coming back here again. And as soon as the door closes behind you, you forget all of that.
Yeah.
Because you're in the world now. And man, I can't tell you how many times I totally forgot about that. I try regularly to keep myself around people who are just getting out of jail, mm-hmm. people who are in jail, people are in prison, or just remind myself by being grateful for the goofy little things I have and go, wow, these scissors work really good. I'm so glad I have scissors. When you were in jail, you never had scissors. Whatever. Just really encouraging myself to appreciate the stuff that can be removed from you so quickly when you, if you step off the course you're on.
Right.
Yeah. So, well, and Texas, you mentioned tweezers and scissors and things like that, which make me laugh in a way, but then there are big things that have been restored to you as a result of, you know, all this change and sobriety and realization and all of that. And you mentioned your kids earlier. Can you talk a little bit about what your relationship is like with your kids? Because it sounds like a good chunk of their lives, you may not have been present.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. When God says he'll restore everything and he'll use everything negative for good, he ain't kidding, because I'll tell you what, my relationship with my family and my children is phenomenal. It is. My kids, you know, I gave up the right to have any real authority in their life when they were younger by not being there. You can't be telling somebody what to do if you don't live there. You can't say you can't wear that if you're not there to pick out the clothes at the store. You know what I mean? I mean, come on.
Yeah, yeah.
So I quickly said, okay, I've got to find a different way to approach this. And it was like, kind of like I do when I go into prison. Like, look, I don't care what you do. I can't do anything about it. But I don't think that that's a really good idea because blah, blah, blah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it made me not, now there's a big difference between being too buddy-buddy with your kid too.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I tried not to do that either. And I said, you know, you can do what you're going to do, but I don't think that's a good idea. Look, once they hit 16, I don't care how much control you think you have no control. They can do whatever they want.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're better off to build a relationship with them. So since I was always around, you know, I came for their birthdays and stuff like that. And I fooled myself into thinking that I was still connected to my kids in some way. So I had to go through the process of really recognizing that I abandoned my children. And then I had to apologize for that. And of course, my daughter, it took longer for us to mend the fence than the boys. Boys are good at going, okay, Mom, I love you, it's over, you know? I mean, they had feelings and there were things they had to deal with, but not the same as her. And so that was definitely a process of working through, but you know what? To do, and myself feel better about a reason for me, and the whole God factor who just pulled it all because you're being obedient. And now I there's no one I'm closer to than my daughter, my grandchildren. I babysit them, and you know, I started keeping them at exactly the age that when she's at work, I get them, put them on the bus, get them off the bus. So I really am very involved in their life. And the exact age she was when I first went to jail, and after that was when I really wasn't there for them more. At that exact age, it was the exact age of my oldest grandson when I, and my youngest son was, she was 8. My youngest son was 4, my oldest grandson was 8, and my youngest grandson was 3.5. So they were almost the exact age. So how good is it of God to give me that opportunity to pour into those little people the valuable things that I didn't take time to pour into my own kid? And come on, listen, being a grandparent is the best thing that could ever happen to a human. If you all aren't grandparents.
I am too, yeah.
Yeah.
And it was an amazing experience. And so, yeah. You know, and that's, my relationship with them is unbelievable. It really is. I'm amazed all the time going, wow, these people like me. Because I think of God, and I think of my parents, and I think of my kids, and I think if I were them, I'd have been done with me a long time ago. You know, because they've been definitely kinder to me than I would have been to them, I would think.
Yeah.
Yeah, but God has just, even when I think of my book, when you talk about restoration, it's like, listen, God has so many things for you. If you're out there and you're using and you're not living the way that you know that you should be living, you're getting robbed. You're getting robbed of all the great things that God has for you and all the plans and purposes He has for your life. And that is the only thing that will fulfill you. I had no idea I was a writer. And I'm a writer.
Mm-hmm.
I had no idea that even mattered to me. I didn't even like to read. I'm not a good speller. I could tell you how to find a good vein if you're trying to shoot up. But I don't know how to work on social media. You know, I don't know anything about that. So I had, you know, I dictated my book to the computer, and the computer wrote it, and then I had the computer read it back to me, and I thought, that needs a comma. That needs an explanation point. Now, my mother is a writer, so she edited it, the grammatical errors she corrected. But so I say to you today, like I said, if you're out there and you're, don't tell me what you can't do. Because it's amazing what God will give you the ability to do. He's given you a purpose. He's given you a dream. And He has a plan to make that come into existence. And if you'll submit yourself to that, it'll fill you in a way that nothing else can, and you'll do amazing things. Listen, people that are addicts have the amazing ability to be focused on the cause like nobody else. There's no 9-to-5er that is able to shut down every emotion and thought and feeling to go for a goal. Okay, if we had to walk 10 blocks in the pouring rain at 5 in the morning to go get something we needed to use our drugs, you know, we're going to do that. That's dedication to the cause. Now all we have to do is get the right purpose, the right cause in the right place, and we're unstoppable. God has developed something in you through that horrible lifestyle that he will use to make you the kind of person who will, can accomplish anything through any circumstances. That's who I am. You can't stop me from doing what God called me to do.
Texas, I wouldn't get in your way for all the tea in China.
Or all the brisket in Texas.
There you go.
There you go.
Absolutely.
Well, what a joy it has been to have this conversation with you. What's the title of the book again?
The Deep in the Heart of Texas.
Deep in the Heart of Texas. And I can get that where?
Yep.
Texas, tell us again.
On how a radical difference.
RadicalDifference.com.
I have a website named RadicalDifference.com. The name of my nonprofit is Radical Difference. You can follow me on any social media at A Radical Difference or Texas Streety. Most of them are at Texas Streety because I found people can remember Texas easier than they can remember A Radical Difference.
Okay. Yeah, that's true. And you're available to speak for organizations and events and things like that as well. If someone wanted you to come and share your story for a particular event or a recovery function or something like that, they can reach you at RadicalDifference.com as well, right? To extend you that invitation.
Exactly. They can. Anything you need, you can find at A Radical Difference, or I'm on Facebook, you know, all the time. You can put my email address is easy too, because it's TexasStreety@gmail. I don't need backslashes or periods or anything with that name.
Well, it's Texas and Stready @gmail.com.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Exactly.
All right. Well, Texas, thank you so much. And
this has been a joy. Thank you for joining us via Zoom. And I understand you're going to be in Nashville again in October, and I hope we'll get a chance to be in the same room.
We can do this face to face the next time you're in town. So.
Definitely.
Okay, listeners, stay with us. We'll be back in a moment here on the Positive Sobriety Podcast.
Welcome back to the Positive Sobriety Podcast. And Nate, I told you Texas was fun.
Yeah.
I told you she was going to be a fun guest.
She's a bundle of energy, that woman.
She is. Yeah. I mean, she counts for like three people. She does. And I met her a couple of weeks ago. Uh-huh. A mutual friend introduced us. She came by my office and brought some books, of course. And we had just such a great conversation. And I was struck with her candor and her wit, and just how she doesn't take herself, I don't want to say she doesn't take herself seriously, because she does. Right. I mean, she's very serious about what she does, but she doesn't live in the identity of her past.
Yes.
She doesn't, she isn't defined by that.
Yeah.
And I was really struck by that. And I thought, you know, if I could get her to, you know, just join us and say some of the things that she shared in the office, it would just be a great visit. So I think that the things that she's got to say to us are very timely, in that you know, we just, we need gratitude. We need to not live in our identity of our former selves and regrets, and that restoration takes time. And
yes,
I appreciated what she had to say about her kids and that honest relationship. And we've all, you and I certainly have experienced restored relationship with our children and what that looks like and continues to look like. And so I loved having her on, and I hope our viewers resonate with Texas and all her wisdom.
Yeah. Well, we would love to hear from you. Any feedback, anything you'd like us to pass along to Texas, we will do that. Of course, you can communicate with her directly. But drop us a note if you'd like, and go ahead and rate the podcast. If you get, if you, just take a minute, rate the podcast for us on whatever platform you listen. That helps us climb in the rankings, make us more visible to more people.
Yeah, and you, share us.
Yeah, and you can reach us at positivesobrietypodcast@gmail.com. Mm-hmm. Well, I guess that's it for this week. Until next time, I'm Nate.
I'm David.
And we're your pals on the Positive Sobriety Podcast. The Positive Sobriety Podcast is recorded at Crossroads for the Nations in Brentwood, Tennessee. Live producer Rex Schnelli, music by Rex Schnelli, theme music by Matt Ulrich, hair and makeup by Lyle Lovett, wardrobe by Kathy Gifford.